Education-wise, I knew what I was doing was wrong. I knew I was an addict, alcoholic. I knew once I put that in my body, I couldn't predict my behavior. But what didn't click was that thought process. I didn't have a problem stopping drugs and alcohol. I had a problem staying stopped.
I'm Gabriella Tavakoli-Bailey, and I've worked in unscripted television as an executive producer and TV executive doing what I love most, storytelling. I'm an extremely curious person, and I decided to do this podcast so I can dig in and learn about fascinating people living extraordinary lives. And I called up my very talented friend, Orly Minazad, who is a writer and journalist, and together we are going to learn about people's journeys and provide you with a fun listen and a good time. Welcome to Tell Us Something We Don't Know. Our guest today is Captain Sandy Yon, star of Bravo's Below Deck Mediterranean, a reality show about a yacht crew navigating the sea, each other, and their elite clients. With over three decades of yachting experience under her belt, Captain Sandy is one of the most respected captains in a male-dominated industry. In her new book, Be the Calm or Be the Storm, she shares her personal struggles and how they led her to become an efficient but compassionate leader. I especially love this quote from John Allen, who is prominent in the maritime industry, and he says of her, "Captain Sandy is a woman who has earned every stripe, standing tall at the helm of the super yachts she steers. What is most astonishing about her story is not just the calm and focused way she leads through crisis, but the way she triumphed over her past and has remained committed to sobriety for more than three decades." Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. I'm really grateful to be here.
When Orly and I were kind of going back and forth and talking about we were going to be recording with you and sharing notes and everything, one thing I think both of us didn't realize is that there are pirates out there. I don't know if we're the only two that didn't realize that.
And I'm picturing old school cartoon pirates, like with the skull and bone flag and, you know.
Yeah, they rob the ships of the gold, right? So
Right. So but in your book, I mean, you have some great stories, and I just love how you weave them in with opening up about yourself, but also the leadership tips and whatnot. But can you share with us like the most holy shit pirate story that you experienced?
To be honest, everyone thinks it's the Red Sea story, but it's not. It's the story through Windward Passage. The pirates in the Red Sea, I knew there were warships out there that were on their way to rescue us, right? So for me, it's like, even if the pirates showed up first, the warship was going to show up right after. I was navigating between Haiti and Cuba. It's called Windward Passage. And a lot of boats go that way because to go around Hispaniola Island, you're exposed to the Atlantic Ocean. Mm-hmm. It was really rough in Windward Passage. We tow boats that are very expensive. And most pirates at sea are thieves at sea, right? So they're after our little tender. They're not really in that part of the world going to hijack our boat like they would in other parts of the world. We would notice this target on the radar. We call them targets where you see other boats. Mm-hmm. And it was going really fast, about 32 knots coming towards us. And it was rough on the other side. I called the Coast Guard on my phone and said, I think a pirate is pursuing our vessel to steal our tender. And the Coast Guard said, we've had 90 attempts this month.
Jeez.
We're on our way. And I knew that there was a Coast Guard station in Cuba. So it really was like, okay, we got help here. Calling them on my phone didn't alert the pirates that I had called for help. We're told to light up our vessel. So we did, and we zigzagged our course, and I put the throttle down, right? So that was, for me, the scariest time, because you're actually active pursuit of your yacht. And when we started to enter into the Caribbean Sea, it was quite rough, and they turned around. When you have a boat that's pounding into the sea, all the fluids, the oil, the gasoline, the fuel is all moving around. So the sediment is coming up, right?
Right, right.
As we did that, I lost an engine.
Oh, God.
So now I passed the pirates. They are not coming out in that rough sea. We're in like 8 to 10 foot seas. And now I lost an engine, and I had a deadline to make for the Antigua Charter Show. And then I'm like, oh my God, now we have to go into Dominican Republic to get our engine fixed.
Oh God.
So once we escaped, we had to re-enter, but it wasn't Haiti, right? So Hispaniola Island is very large, which has Dominican Republic. That's where I had to go dock, and it was crazy. And we were like security all night long, but we made it out. And the most intense time, to answer your question, was Windward Passage in my life over the fire in the Red Sea.
So when you said that you alert the pirates that you called for help, how do you alert them?
So when I had the fire in the Red Sea, I called for help over my VHF radio. And I said, I'm an American citizen, sustained a fire, and I'm floating in Yemen territory. Here's my latitude and longitude. I alerted the pirates who were also monitoring that channel exactly where we were, that we were adrift. It was who gets there first. For some reason, I wasn't worried about the pirates getting to us first. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I kept thinking about keeping the crew member from jumping overboard and the other crew member from killing the other crew member for pulling the CO2. Like, I was dealing with crew on board.
Yeah.
Logistics, not thinking about the pirates. And the security guy on board during the Red Sea is like, the pirates are on their way. And I'm like, when they're off the bow of the boat, that's when you can tell me the pirates are here. But until then, I don't want to hear the pirates are on their way. That's not helping me.
She's so chill. Like, oh, the pirates are on the way. That's fine. I have shit to do.
Yeah. Please. Yes, exactly. Like, you can't be thinking what could be. You got to think about what is and deal with that situation one problem at a time. Because trust me, there are a lot of problems.
And also the way that other people react, right? The people around you and how they're reacting to it and their fears and whatnot. So it's not just about attacking the situation at hand, which is not letting the pirates get to you, but also how to
maintain the calm on board, because we were in a storm. We were in pirate infested waters. We were adrift off the coast of Yemen. That country was in a civil war. I had crew members who were freaking out, trying to jump overboard.
This is the other story.
Yeah, that was the Red Sea. It's like, how do you show up in your situations, right? Every situation, you show up differently. We just do, because how we feel about ourselves, mentally, physically, how are we centered? The Red Sea, for me, I felt very calm. I didn't feel scared. I guess I was scared when we were in the sea and we were anchored off. But during the fire, I didn't feel, I acted. I acted on my training. Whereas when I was underway, they were chasing us. We were not being chased in the Red Sea. The threat of piracy was there. But after we had gone ashore, and I had 12 crew members plus myself being put in the back of a pickup truck and driven through Hodeida, Yemen.
Yeah.
That's when I had some fear, thinking, I think we're on our way to be held hostage.
Right.
Good news is we were not. We were taken to immigrations. So you have those moments in life where, yes, that fear creeps in. But as their leader, I couldn't show that. I could not show that. In fact, I saw kids carrying machine guns and I just started crying. And it wasn't fear. It was out of sadness in my heart. And what I saw in their eyes was hopelessness. When I saw in our back of our pickup truck was hope. And I thought, that begins with leadership. If the leader has hope, your team's going to have hope.
You were in Yemen though for 2 weeks and you got sick.
I got malaria and I didn't know
It's crazy.
And yeah, it's crazy, right? I had no idea.
So where's the rest of the crew while you're sick with malaria?
The security guy I had, he's actually a former SAS British officer.
Okay.
It's the equivalent to a Navy SEAL. And he suggested I fly everyone out, but him and I. And I'm like, he goes, we're a bigger target. There are 13 people. Yeah. Get rid of the 12, you know? So I did, and it was just him and I.
Oh, wow.
It was from brushing my teeth with the water, I think. I'm not sure, but I got really sick. And once the boat was secured and getting towed away, we drove to Sana'a, which is the capital of Yemen. We flew out of Sana'a to Dubai. The minute I landed in Dubai, he's like, you need doctor. So he took me to the doctor, took me to the pediatrician.
That was probably the only doctor they can find in that situation.
Yeah. I was in the pediatrician's office. It was kind of funny.
Did you get a lollipop?
But, you know, they did test my blood right there. I watched them put the samples in.
Yeah.
It's spun in that thing. And he goes, there are 500 strands of malaria where you were. You have one of them. I'm going to treat you for the most common strands. I didn't know that many. And so I was sick for weeks.
Oh, when you have malaria, does that just mean like you're puking? And
I had a bad fever. I was hallucinating. I mean, I was really ill. Oh. I was so sick. I could barely walk. The guy had to practically carry me to the car.
Oh.
Yeah. So that story's in the book.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
My life sounds very boring now. Like after I heard all of this, I'm like.
It ages you though. I mean, I'm just saying like every time I'd have something happen at sea, and it's not just about pirates. It's if things break and you're in the middle of the ocean. And,
all the drama. Yeah.
You know, the crew, they're coming out from their cabins because they're afraid for their lives. You got to look like you're in control.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, there are those days you take off from the dock and the sea is calm and flat and it's a full moon. You see the Milky Way and you're like, whoa, it's pretty cool.
What does it mean exactly to be a captain?
I think it's something that you've worked your entire life and educated yourself on every level of your skill, right? That's required to be a captain. So for me, it's navigation, management, style. I didn't really take courses on management. My courses came from living it, right? So I thought, I have worked for many owners. How do I want to lead my team? So I learned the navigation side, the financial side, and you learn spreadsheets and budgeting and all of that. To be a captain is so much more than just driving a boat. You're running a business.
Yeah.
I learned that. But one of the things you have to master is personalities. When you're in fit mental condition, you can lead others, but until you are, you're not going to do great at leading others if you're not leading yourself first. Am I centered when I walk out of my cabin? Am I taking care of myself mentally and spiritually and physically for me to be able to lead others? And to be a captain, you have to know how to do that. So many CEOs of companies just expect you to produce without giving. It's not a give take, it's a give give, right? And a lot of CEOs think, I'm paying you, now you give me this. It's like, you got to do more than just pay someone or go here, go learn this. It's about a flow. And to be a captain, of course you have to learn everything you need to learn, the skill set, but then there's that other set that's really something that you must live yourself in order to be able to lead others.
To become a captain, do you have to have like a degree or like?
So you go to maritime school. So you don't have to graduate school.
Okay.
I was kicked out. You cannot be a convicted felon.
Okay.
You have to be able to not have a felony. You could have misdemeanors. You know, because there are people out there that in my industry, I was one of those. So I went to a school called Maritime Professional Training based in Fort Lauderdale. It costs $1,000 roughly to get your STC W-95. And I needed a physical from the Coast Guard and a drug test. You can't be on drugs. So basically, once I had that, I could go and get a job. Then it's like an apprenticeship, right? So you start learning,
I see.
You're hands-on.
Yeah.
Then you
go
for your other courses, right? So you go for navigation, rules of the road, firefighting, radar, all these courses. The Coast Guard, I'm just going to talk U.S., requires a certain amount of days at sea. So I need 780 days at sea. So you have to keep track, and a boat has to stamp your book. So you have a book.
Okay.
It's called a seafarer's book. And then you need a passport. And then this is what you get. It is called Merchant Marine Credential, United States of America. Essentially, this license is a federal license.
Wow. Okay.
Isn't that cool? So I'm actually a merchant marine officer for the U.S. government, which entitles me to be able to go and run super yachts. It's all those hours at sea and days at sea that you learn what to do in case something happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you have a passion for the sea and boats, or how did you like the first time that you're like, this is what I want to do?
I grew up on the water skiing. So my family always had small boats. I love the water. I'm a Pisces. I never knew there was a job in yachting ever in my life until I happened to end up in Fort Lauderdale, lived in a halfway house because I was getting sober, kind of like needed a job and started washing boats for a living. And then I would see these crew on boats and I'm like, is that a job? They're like, yeah, we're crew. Next thing you know, the guy that I was working for offered me a full-time job. He taught me, he sent me to sea school. He sent me to maritime professional training. and engineering class and all this other stuff. So I learned that. And then he sold that boat after 9 years I worked for him, and he taught me navigation. And I ran the boat to the Bahamas. I went up to the Northeast. I learned how to dock without a bow thruster. So that's why people go, wow, she docks a boat so well, because I did it on smaller boats without crew and bow thrusters. Mm. Then I advanced in my career. That was my path.
So did he recognize something in you? Because it doesn't seem like a trivial job to offer somebody.
It was a work ethic. He saw how hard I worked. Remember now, I had just gotten sober and I worked really hard, and he admired my attention to detail, how hard I worked, and he offered me a job. And I'm grateful. We're still in each other's lives today.
I was going to ask, because that's such a sweet way of having your life changed, you know?
You only need that one person that believes in you, that can help open a door. And then if you have that drive, I think that you too can be like Captain Sandy. So in terms of your sobriety, in your book, you talk about how you were 13 years old when you first had a Quaalude. When you look back at that time in your life, and then being sober for so long now, did you ever think that you were in a messy situation with it? Or did you just think you were having fun? Like, what was that like for you when you were experiencing it?
I think I was just trying to fit in. Like, I didn't really fit anywhere. I was doing drugs at that point. And you can not call it peer pressure anymore, because that's what I grew up with. You can call it being influenced. So you have influencers on social media. They're influencing you to buy things.
Yep.
Just buy. Their actions, right? So someone getting high or having a party or, oh my God, this is amazing. You're being influenced by watching that. And that's what happened to me. There's a girl, and I want to share this. You never know who you're impacting by influencing from your own actions. We influence people on a daily basis, no matter how we show up in life. And this woman, Vicky, drove Paul Allen's boat out of Monaco Boat Show. And I was in awe. I was like, wow, one day I want to drive a boat that big. Wow, that's a woman. And it inspired me. So she influenced me through her behavior by driving that boat. And I was like, that woman today had no idea the impact she had on me just by showing up in life and doing her job. So be mindful of that. That's what I want to say to your listeners. Be mindful of who you are and how you show up. Because someone's watching and you are influencing someone in your life, or someone watching you that admires you.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So that's what happened to me. And then next thing you know, I was on that drug merry-go-round. I was like, again, anyway, so many times.
Was there anybody that you feel like helped you get sober?
Everybody that crossed my path that helped me. Not one person. It was a village. To be honest, like the student wasn't ready. You know, when they say when the student's ready, the teacher will appear.
Yep.
In our book, it talks about having a psychic change, right? So education wise, I knew what I was doing was wrong. I knew I was an addict, alcoholic. I knew once I put that in my body, I couldn't predict my behavior. But what didn't click was that thought process. I didn't have a problem stopping drugs and alcohol. I had a problem staying stopped. It was when things started going great for me that I started using again. When it was all falling apart, it was easy for me to stop. It wasn't easy for me to stay stopped when I got it all back. The success, I would always sabotage. I had to have that psychic change. There was something inside of me that goes, I no longer want to live like this. One day at a time, I'm going to follow their direction. In their world, a lot of people don't believe in God. And so the meetings, they come up with the meaning of God, good, orderly direction. Just use that. So I thought, I'm just going to go in a good, orderly direction. And that's really helped me. And the people that show up, I have a sponsor. I love her. And we have all this self-work, right? So we work on ourselves. And when people say, oh my God, you're inspiring. You're an amazing leader. Well, I learned all this. And nothing's original that comes out of my mouth. I have learned that from someone else.
When you weren't sober, what did that look like?
I was a mess. Arrests, detox, halfway houses, three-quarter way houses. I had no car. I didn't have a driver's license for 5 years. Like, my life was constant chaos and destruction of myself, you know, meaning like not healthy, just a tornado rolling through life.
Yeah.
Thank God I'm sober. Thank you, God. Like, I can't imagine ever going back to that.
Do you ever have times, though, where you have cravings or it's like...
I don't have a craving, but I do go, man, I just wish I could turn the mind off.
Yeah.
You know how alcohol can do that? Kind of puts it to sleep. So I have to use exercise. I use music. You find different ways to cope. Yeah. So that's what I do. And it's working. And the book is, all my friends are texting me and all these people from all over the world are reading it. And they're like, oh my God, I love like the feedback. I did an audio version and I'm trying to listen to it. Like, it's hard to hear your own voice. And
right.
My friend Diane goes, oh my God, I love it. I just finished it. The audio, it's awesome. It's really cool. So,
and writing a book is no easy task. I mean, you've been doing it for 3 years and you had a ghostwriter that was interviewing you daily.
That's right.
I always wonder about like when you're writing a memoir or writing anything about your own life, how do you remember the details of the story?
We interviewed people in my family that remember versions of. I'm like, I don't remember that. My former crew that I was with for years, right? So when a captain hires their crew, they're seasoned. You're together for years. They'll leave for a month because they get a month paid holiday, but they always come back.
Yeah, I was going to say the relationships and the bond that you have, it's like going away on camp or something, and you know about every side of each other. And then sometimes you don't talk to the person for years. Is that how it is for you?
Yes. You know, and I remember when Facebook first started because Rob Owen, check this out, Sandy. We're in the crew mess in Tuscan Sun in Barcelona. He goes, I could just poke my friend. I'm like, friend? He goes, yeah, he's in Australia. I go, well, you're really not poking him. He goes, I can just give him a beer. I'm like, well, you're really not giving him a beer, Rob. He goes, yeah, look, I'm giving him a beer. And I'm like, well, you're not really giving him a beer. He goes, it's a fake beer. I go, okay, fine. You know, you have these moments in the crew mess. And I remember that this other crew member I had ate all the yogurts and the crew were mad. He's like, why does he eat 20 yogurts in one sitting? You know, you remember those things as a captain. You have to go, I know you like yogurt, but there are others that live here too. You know? So it's that balance. And you just remember their faces. And hey, listen, we were in Genoa, Italy, we were in Barcelona, and all my crew were snowboarders. And I go, well, let's go snowboarding. On a rainy day, I drive us to Andorra. And so Dominic and Salome, we call her Sally, she was my chef and he was an engineer. And he taught me how to snowboard and he bought my goggles. And it was cool because you have this bond. And I would always take me snowboarding. We skied in the Dolomites. Like if it was a rainy day, you have these moments and you form that bond. It lasts forever.
I mean, that's the kind of work environment people dream of, honestly. And it's so hard to find. I have zero boat experience, but if you want to hire me, I'm available.
We work hard now. I mean, and I don't snow. Your life is not your own. Yeah. It's not that glamorous. Trust me.
I actually meant to ask you because you're on water for so long. How are you, one, gone for so long, but also how do you stay sane being with these specific people? Like, all the time, every day? And is it because you're so busy running it that it's not?
Yeah, but when you're around people with character, you build on that. And as a captain, I had a freedom that most crew don't have. So I maintained as much as I could. But, you know, I'm later in life now. I have the love of my life. And I now just do the show. And if I have a few deliveries, which I'd love to do, I would do that. The gone time now is just corporate speaking on leadership. And yeah, that's it. So Leah, we have a great relationship. I don't have any complaints. Like, I don't think she does either. There's a good balance. We have goals. It's good to have goals.
Yeah.
And how did you guys meet?
Facebook. Isn't that funny?
What? Did you poke her?
I didn't poke her. She actually sent me a message. She came across the show. And she wrote many blessings, and that stuck out to me because I had thousands of messages. Actually, with my sponsor, I go, I was single for 2 years, and I'm like, I think I'm ready. She goes, write a list of the person, you know, all the qualities, all of it. So I wrote this list, and 30 days later, I decided to check the messages, and she had wrote in June. And then we met a month after I checked the messages, and we knew immediately.
But how did you ask her? Like, what did you respond? She wrote many blessings, or she wrote?
Yeah,
like,
and I said hi. Well, I was doing this, I believe, tour, and I wanted singers. And honestly, like, she has a voice. She's a real singer.
She does gospel.
Gospel, yeah. Mm-hmm. Until she started seeing me, and then she like kicked off the platform, which is sad.
Ugh.
I don't know. God loves people that love the same sex. Yeah, I don't understand that. But here we are today.
Yeah.
You write this list of what you want in a woman, and then 30 days later, you meet Leah.
Mm-hmm. But you know what I left off the list?
What?
Where they lived.
Ah, see? You have to be specific. And I'm going to tell you a quick story. So I had a list before I met my husband that was like 2,000 pages long. Nadine Rajabi, who is the showrunner EP of Below Deck, she officiated our wedding. And
that was her?
Yes.
Oh, she was so good.
When she was writing her speech and everything, I was telling her about, you know, the list and everything. She's like, Gabby, you got to send me this list. I was like so embarrassed because I had things like big muscular hands and, you know,
you'd be embarrassed about that. That makes sense.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so at the wedding, she reads the list of all the things, but she wouldn't stop. She would not stop. And she just kept going. Do you remember that?
Dying.
I was like,
yes.
Oh God. So I'm up there and I'm holding my husband James's hands. And I'm just like, oh God. So anyway, it works. And you did not put geographically desirable.
Yeah.
So,
but it still worked out. You put enough of it that, you know.
Yes. You know, Leah did a vision board, and on that vision board, she put America's Got Talent. Well, guess what? Leah got on America's Got Talent. So I said, you didn't write you want to win.
Yeah, exactly.
You forgot the most important part.
Yeah. Well, I think for her, it's like she knew she made it, right? But the only reason she didn't go back was because of COVID.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah.
Anyway, but the intention, and I believe in that, what you think about is what you bring about. And the cool thing about this book is it's published by Louise Hay's company. Louise Hay created Hay House. When I got sober, everybody in the rooms were reading about Louise Hay. What you think about is what you bring about. Your intention, affirmations. That's Louise Hay.
Yeah.
The fact that I'm a Louise Hay author blows my mind. It's like full circle.
So between being captain and author, writing your memoir, which one did you just not believe would have ever happened?
Honestly, both. I didn't have dreams as a kid. I didn't have that. So I had parents that struggled. They did the best they could. I don't blame my parents for anything.
Yeah.
But I didn't have dreams. I had the dream after I got sober. The dream came to me. Now I have like dreams, you know, now I'm creating a charity to be able to change lives with the platform I've been given and have it continue on even after I'm no longer here to continue to help people. That's a dream.
That's amazing.
For Below Deck, how did that happen? How did you get on the show? Based on what you're saying, you didn't have a dream to be on a reality show, right?
No. In fact, Nadine Rajabi, it was her. We had a mutual friend, I guess, Monique Marvez, who's a comedian. And she was with Nadine and said, I know someone, Captain Sandy. And she introduced us. And Nadine picked the ball up and ran with it. And there were some people who objected to having me, or one person felt like it was a man's job. It wasn't a woman's job. And it's the dad of the boat.
Wow.
It's a male dominated industry. But now you have paved the way.
Yeah. And, you know, Nadine was a big part of that. And honestly, like, again, you never know who you're influencing by just showing up and doing what you do best, right? Your job or who you are as a human being. And she did that. And she continues to do that. You know, next thing you know, she went dark on me. And I thought, okay, it wasn't meant to be. Next thing you know, I got the call because she was told to go dark on me because now it was at the next phase. It was a bunch of women that made it happen. Let's put it that way. And that's really cool. And just saying that, like being on the TV show, the most critical of people that I have are women. It's like, I want women to support women. I want women to have each other's back.
Yeah. All right, some rapid fires. Who is your celebrity doppelganger?
Mario Hemingway. I get that a lot.
Okay.
I also get, I wish it could be Charlize Theron.
Oh, yes. Best gift that Leah ever got you?
Her.
Aw. Like, you could see it in your eyes and your smile how much you love her. That's pretty special. So,
yeah, thank you.
Biggest pet peeve?
On airplanes, when people are not considerate of other people. So this person like turned their music on their phone, and this guy behind me goes, "That's obnoxious. Turn it off." It was like people were making comments. I just sat there because, you know, when you're in the public eye, you're like not drawing attention to yourself. Right. But I just wanted to go, really?
What's something that happened to you that makes you believe in everything happens for a reason?
My motorcycle crash. They discovered kidney cancer.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I was doing 70 miles an hour on a motorcycle, hit a car, T-boned it, and they found cancer because I had to have a full body scan.
Full body scan. And that's how they found it. Oh, my God. Isn't that incredible?
I was like, why couldn't you just make it more gentle?
But you're okay now, right?
But yes, I'm fine. They removed the cancer.
Oh, good.
Thank God.
Good, good, good. If you weren't a captain, what would you be?
If I wasn't a captain, I would own a hair salon. I wouldn't do hair because I would own a salon because I love how people, the energy in a hair salon. Yeah. It's always vibey. People are always talking. Good music.
I would have never guessed that would be your answer. I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
Pumpkin spice latte, yay or nay?
I like pumpkin.
Yeah. All right. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
If I had a superpower, I would be able to fly.
Oh. Best advice you ever got?
Mind my own backyard. Mind my own side of the street. The best advice I ever got, don't stick your nose in other people's business. Don't give unsolicited advice. It carries you far in life.
That's true. Stay in your lane for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, you're at karaoke. Pick a song.
It would be the song called Stuck that Leah wrote.
Oh, gosh. Do you think Leah will come on real quick and say hello?
Yes. Leah, come on up. Come say hi. Come on. Stuck. When you're trying to move and your feet won't do what you need them to do. Stuck. And just like that, you can't go forward and you can't go back. It's like stepped in glue. Those are not the words. Yes, they are.
No, I'm kidding.
Hi. So this song, can you sing a little for us? Or is that just putting you on the spot?
Oh, yeah. That's putting me on the spot.
Yeah, that's putting you on the spot. Here's the last question on our rapid fires. We always like to end with, tell us something we don't know, like about yourself, that we would be surprised to hear. So tell us something about Captain Sandy that people wouldn't know.
Well, she is super playful, like a huge child at heart. Like people that know her call her the Peter Pan. Yeah, I don't think they really show her playing as much as she plays here at home.
And then Captain Sandy, about Leah?
She can really sing.
I can really sing.
It's not through the equipment. She's a mom.
Oh,
and she loves me.
I love her.
Leah wears everything out there. Everybody knows about Leah.
I'm pretty open.
Yeah, we're open.
What you see is what you get, which is great.
She brings me coffee every morning.
Oh, you're so lucky.
Yes. Because she wakes up before me. But yeah. I would bring her coffee, but she brings me cafe every morning. Honestly, she makes it perfectly.
Yeah, she teaches me to play more because I'm a little more like uptight and can be a little more careful. And she's like, let's just do it, you know? So we're a good balance for each other.
Well, it was nice meeting you, Leah. And Captain Sandy, Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being on our show. And your book is incredible. And I'm sure that a lot of people are going to be running after it and checking it out. So thank you. Thank you so much for listening to Tell Us Something We Don't Know. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at TUSWDK or email us at info@tellussomethingwedontknow.com. Audio and editing by Simon Greffenstedt and theme music provided by Signature Tracks.